This is Transfiguration, is traditionally the text for the Sunday before the beginning of Lent. In the gospel stories of Jesus, just before this happens, Jesus has been speaking to his disciples about the hard road he sees in front of him. He predicts his suffering and death. It's hard for the disciples to hear these things and to believe that this will happen to someone they have recognized as a presence of God on earth. I'm reading from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9, verses 28 to 36. Now, about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which was he about to accomplish in Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighted down with sleep, but since they stayed awake, they saw the glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent in those days and told no one of any of the things that they had seen. This is the word of the Lord.
Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth, the meditations of all of our hearts, the way we sing, please you, make you glad, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I just recently learned that in many cultures there is a legend about how it is that a soul gets into a human body. In Japanese culture, babies are thought to come into the world from very far away. A baby's soul finds this world very strange, the legend goes. And so the mother or the caregiver must keep the baby very close, never leave the baby alone, so that the soul will not be afraid, and so that it will know that it is welcome to stay inside this little body. The Norwegian legend is that before a soul is put into a body, God kisses it. All during life on earth, the soul remembers that kiss, and everything that happens in this life connects in some way to that memory. And the Jewish version of the legend is that just before God puts a soul into the body of a new life on earth, the soul must forget about its life before in heaven, the life it has already shared with God. An angel presses the baby's mouth shut, a gesture that reminds that tiny being that during her whole life on earth, she must be silent about what she has seen of the holy. That little crevice that each of us has underneath our nose is the imprint of the angel's finger, sealing your lips. That's why, they say, when you are trying to remember something, sometimes without even thinking, you will put your own finger in that space. When we are speaking of holy things, we do have a hard time putting our experience into words. It's as though we're trying to remember or find the words for something that we have just barely touched, something just out of our reach. Maybe you know the experience of trying to tell someone about what you believe or about a spiritual connection that you sensed once and finding yourself clumsy, inarticulate, unable to say what you felt, what you are sure you know, or at least knew for a moment. I know I have felt that many times, maybe all the time. Take heart. The Bible is full of stories that echo our experience of how hard it is to talk about God, how elusive a vision of God is. Even the most spiritual people only get a brief glimpse before that light retreats again. It's hard to hold on to. We are left wanting more, wondering if what we saw was real. In fact, you might say that elusiveness, mystery, even distance is a theme that runs through all of our stories of God. Even Moses, who talked with God regularly, got only an angled view of him. "I want to see you in your full glory," Moses told God once. "Show me." "Nope," God said. "Stand over there behind a rock, and as I pass by, you'll be able to see my back, but not my face. It would be too much. We are too different." And the people that Moses led could absorb even less. Every time Moses came down from the mountain where he talked with God, he drew a veil over his face, knowing that his encounter with God had put a light in his face and in his eyes that would blind them. Nobody wants God's light shining that brightly on their lives. In every space where the Israelites worshiped God, first in the tent they carried with them across the desert in the Exodus, then in the temple that Solomon built in Jerusalem, there was a curtain, a veil, that separated the sanctuary where the people stood from the area where the priest went to encounter God directly on their behalf. Always, their experience of God was indirect, as though it was supposed to be hard for them to know exactly what God looked or smelled or sounded like. Today, John read the story known as the Transfiguration of Jesus, which comes right out of the middle of the Gospels. Jesus took three of his disciples one day, and they walked up the mountain. Peter, James, John, the inside team, Jesus' best friends, the ones he really wanted to understand him. All of a sudden, there was this great light around Jesus. There seemed to be two other figures standing with him. Moses and Elijah, they looked like, the two greatest prophets in Israel's history. And the three were talking as if they knew each other. For just a moment, those disciples felt like they got it. Clarity, the kind of certainty they hadn't felt often about who Jesus was, what category of greatness he belonged in. And then a cloud came down, obscuring the light, cutting off their vision. Peter reacted in the way most of us probably would have. "Oh my gosh, that was amazing," he said. "Let's build something here. Let's mark this spot. Put something right here that will help us recreate this moment again. If we got that holy feeling here, like this, maybe it can happen again." "No," the voice in the cloud said. Maybe that voice sounded loud mostly inside of them, where already the vision had started to fade out of focus a little. And when they came down off that mountain, they never told anyone. They never did try to explain to their friends what they saw up there. They couldn't have done it. That doesn't mean they forgot or that it didn't change them in some way. But it was a moment, a glimpse, impossible to recapture in the same way they had experienced it. Almost by definition, an experience of the holy is hard to hold on to. It visits you for a moment, just a flash of peace or well-being or purpose, and then it's gone again. You can't make it come back at will. If you could, it wouldn't be God. It would be a statue, an idol. We carry those glimpses around like half-forgotten memories. We depend on them to keep us inspired and connected, and we long for more of them. At the foundation of the Christian form of faith is a belief that we have been given more, that God has revealed himself, actually given us a long look at God's face in the single life of a person who lived more than 2,000 years ago. That in this person, Jesus, God disclosed more fully than ever before or since who God is, what God was hoping for in people, in creation. And in fact, this is what distinguishes Christianity from every other religion in the world. This incarnation, this willingness of God to be one of us, with us, unveiled. What does it mean to be a person of spirit? What would a life filled with God's love look like? Jesus, his words, the stories about how he lived, they give us some concreteness to what can otherwise seem pretty vague and feathery. You love the person in front of you, Jesus says. The person who is here in this place, tugging on your sleeve now. You feed the one who is hungry. You bring in the one who has been left out. You forgive the one who has hurt you. You come to this table and you chew and swallow a meal like the one we have shared together this morning. And then you go out to be the presence of God to someone else. This is how you see God. This way of living is God. God appears in every one of these moments. And here's the magical thing. In the moments we live the way Jesus told us to, we not only see God, we are seen. We too are unveiled. We are disclosed, lifted out of our isolation in a way that deep inside, in some way maybe we have never even named, all of us long for. Meeting God is not just an occasional burst of ecstasy. It's a relationship in which you are seen and known and stayed with. A relationship of intimacy. Intimacy much more profound than just physical. Intimacy which, when you break it into its syllables, can be thought of as into me see. Over the next 6 weeks of Lent, we're going to be exploring what intimacy, into me see, looks like. The season begins this coming Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, when we'll repeat the ancient ritual that has always marked the beginning of Lent, wiping ashes onto our foreheads as a reminder that we are deeply and essentially connected to the earth, part of the cycle of life and death that all living things share. On Sundays, we'll look more closely at some of the people who opened themselves up to Jesus. We'll think about the questions that Jesus asked them, what those questions called for from them, and what they might ask of us. And then on the following Wednesday evenings, we'll gather for simple dinners together and practice some of the things that you might think of as life skills, tools for building authentic, open relationships with other people. Inside your bulletin this morning, you'll find some other practices that we're suggesting for the season: a Sunday afternoon Bible study, a book recommendation, a Lenten fast. Lent is an invitation to engage more deeply in your own spiritual life between now and Easter, which comes at the end of March. The season of Lent is 40 days, roughly a tenth of the year. Think of it as a tithe of your time, one-tenth of your days this year, to give to practicing life in a more intimate relationship with God and with other people. Transfiguration Sunday, as John said, is always celebrated in the church on the Sunday before Lent begins. Maybe this story of Jesus and his disciples' hike up the mountain when the light of God shone with so much brightness that they were stunned, maybe it's there to remind us of the occasional glimpses that we have had of God's face, the love and peace, the clarity that we get for just a moment before it slips through our fingers again. How much we long to live in that embrace, closely held, completely seen, deeply understood. Amen.